Well, some of you know, Ira and I are voters for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ira's been on the board over 20 years, I think, Ira, right?
That's right, 20 years.
And I've been on for 14. And in that time, there are occasions where either the selection of a certain individual or the presentation of that person is as surprising as it is noteworthy. And I think that was the case. In fact, I'm sure that was the case this year when former Bears defensive tackle Steve McMichael was elected as one of two senior members to the Hall's class of 2024. Now, I'll be honest, neither Ira nor I saw that coming, but today's guest did. That's because Dan Pompey of The Athletic worked tirelessly on his presentation to gain support for yet another key member of the 1985 Bears, yet one, Ira, as you know, who had never, ever been a Hall of Fame semifinalist. Yet Dan Pompey believed Steve McMichael belonged Canton, and now he does. Dan joins us today from where else? Chicago is home. Dan, first of all, congratulations on the presentation. And secondly, thanks so much for joining us. Good to hear from you.
It's great to be with you guys, two of my favorite writer buddies through the years, and it's always fun to see you guys in press boxes, and always good to chat with you and Hall of Fame functions as well. So this should be a good conversation. Thanks for having me.
Dan, thanks for doing this. Dan, Devin Hester has a gold jacket in part thanks to you. Adam Vinatieri, Dan, will be on the ballot next year for the first time eligible. Dan, could you make us a case that Hester's entrance into the hall could possibly open the door for more specialists? Like a Steve Tasker, Matthew Slater in 5 years? Or do you think this is an isolated case with Hester?
Well, I hope that he does open up our minds to some of these other players who are clearly deserving. You know, some of them were the greatest ever at what they did or close to it. And in my opinion, they deserve to be Hall of Famers. Certainly Vinatieri, I think, is going to get a lot of play. I'll be stunned if he doesn't get in the Hall of Fame pretty quickly. I think another guy who we've never discussed, who to me we need to discuss, is Shane Leckler, the punter, great punter. I mean, if you look at his accomplishments, look at his resume, it's up there with any punter who ever lived. Obviously, things have changed since Ray Guy's days in terms of how we measure punters and what's expected of them. But Leckler just has a tremendous, tremendous resume. So yeah, I mean, I hope that we do open our minds to some of these different players because they are certainly deserving as some of the greatest players who ever lived.
And Lecler did it for a long, long time, right, Dan? I mean, a long time. He was out there. No
Long
question
time,
about
he
it.
was just outstanding at it, year after year after year. And he was really rare in that regard. And I'm kind of stunned that he's never gotten to be a semifinalist.
Dan, you know these numbers very well, but I'm going to recite them for our viewers. 1983 to 1988. Dan, 6 years, it's an eternity by NFL standards. The Bears' top five scoring defense every year, 6 years. Three times in that span, number one. Well, Dan, there's four guys in the Hall of Fame, just like, off the 2002 Bucks, four defenders in the Hall. Dan, are we missing anybody? Yeah. Could you make a fairly credible case for a Wilbur Marshall, or are we done with the Bears?
Look, Wilbur Marshall, to me, there was a point in time when you might have argued he was the best player on that team. I don't think he necessarily sustained it over a long period of time, like Steve McMichael did, for instance. I think, in hindsight, he probably did himself a disservice regarding this conversation by going to the Washington Redskins at the time as one of the first players who ever moved teams in the free agent system. But, great, great player. If we're missing a guy from that team, to me, it's Jay Hilgenberg, the center. You look at his credentials. I mean, they're not much different from Jason Kelce's guy who we're all talking about. Oh, he's got to be first ballot Hall of Fame or this and that. As you guys know, that, you know, that first ballot talk is often overblown, but Hilgenberg was a tremendous player on a great line, and really, you know, seven Pro Bowlers. They were the number one run offense in the league multiple times, close to it when they weren't. And, you know, he was the glue to the whole thing. So to me, he was the guy that if I'm going to really stand on the table for someone, it's Jay Hilgenberg from that team.
We're speaking with Hall of Fame voter Dan Pompey on the I Test for Two. And Dan, just going back to what you were saying about Wilbur Marshall, I couldn't agree with you more, but it's so difficult to get three linebackers from the same team, almost impossible. We talked about this last week, the passing of Andy Russell in Pittsburgh. Andy Russell's a Hall of Fame worthy player, but he gets no traction. Carl Banks in New York, there's been push for him. He gets no traction either. I think when you have two that are in, it's virtually impossible to get a third in. And I think Wilbur Marshall, I agree with you 100%. When he left for Washington, I thought, oh boy, that's going to hurt. And much like, when Ricky Waters did that with Philadelphia, I was covering him in San Francisco. I remember seeing him years later and he said, hey, I've got the numbers to be in the Hall of Fame. I said, you do, Ricky, but you had the impact in San Francisco and that hurt you.
Yeah, it's a good point, Clark. You know, I think the natural inclination of all of us is to say, well, who was the guy? Why was the unit successful? Or, you know, if this guy was so good, you know, maybe the other guy was kind of riding his coattails or something. Now, that's not always true, but I think that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, I think that worked against Steve McMichael. You know, the Bears now have three defensive linemen from that team in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They're the only team, I believe, in history that you could say that about.
So right. He
often was overshadowed as a player because, you know, he wasn't a first-round pick like Dan Hampton. He wasn't getting as many sacks as Richard Dent. He played in only two Pro Bowls as a result. You know, but if you look at the totality of his work, you know, everything that he contributed to that team, both as an interior pass rusher and a great run defender, you know, to me, there was no question that he should have been and was very, very worthy for that Pro Football Hall of Fame gold jacket.
I'm glad you brought him up because that's what I wanted to talk to you about. We all know what he's going through, and he's battling ALS and has been for a while. It's a very emotional thing for Bears fans. I would surmise that it's pretty emotional for you as well. How personal was this for you, and how emotional was it for you?
Well, it was on both accounts. First of all, because I've known Steve pretty well, you know, for the better part of 40 years. And, you know, he was one of the guys who I kind of connected with. You know, you guys know when you're on a beat, you connect with some people. It's, again, it's human nature that some guys you're going to just kind of, you're drawn to, other people, not so much. And he was one of the guys I was drawn to. And so, you know, we've stayed in contact for all these years. And, you know, I was privy to a little bit of his ALS journey early on and got to know more and more about it as his case worsened. And it was very sad and very personal from that standpoint. And then the other thing that made it difficult as a Hall of Fame presenter and voter was that it meant so much to him and his family, you know, and they were very open about it, that, you know, he had a DNR lifted when they thought it was possible that he would be a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's how much it meant to him. So, you know, that brought some pressure, I think, to me that I had never quite felt before, even though certainly I was just a vehicle to kind of transmit the information about what he had done. But certainly I was hoping that, you know, all of the other voters would see it the way that I saw it. You know, the thing about him is his case was never even discussed prior to this year. You know, you guys always highlight players who's, you know, we never really get around to talking about him. He was one of those guys. And I think, you know, once we talked about him, everyone said, yeah, what are we doing? Of course he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, I may have may just as well ask Ira, because he's a member of the seniors committee as well. But what do you think resonated with voters, Dan? Because when I looked at that slate, I thought, I don't know that he's going to get through, because I saw some other guys who had more traction, I thought, with voters. And McMichael, as you mentioned, I mean, never been a semifinalist. And so I looked at this and thought, I don't know what's going to happen, but something did. Something happened in there, whether it was your presentation, whatever it was. But I will say, as long as our listeners pay attention, I think they do, Ira, sometimes when we've got them on here. But you can't mention anything off the field. So you can't mention the struggles that he's going through. Everyone certainly is aware of them. But when you make that presentation, you can't mention that. And so you had to deal with his resume. What stood out for you, and what do you think stood out for voters in that seniors committee when you brought him out as one of three? Art Powell was another one, so was Randy Gradishar, but he was one of three.
Well, I think there were three kind of elements to this. First of all, he was a part of, you know, the defense that many consider the greatest of all time. He was an integral part. He was a guy who played more games over a 10-year period than anyone else in the league, actually, on defense. So, you know, he was a rock. He had the fourth most sacks, since sacks were an official statistic, of any interior player. The only guys with more than him were Randall, Sapp. Sapp, I think, had about a half a sack more, and now Aaron Donald. Now, if you go back to 1960, which, you know, John Turney did that research, I believe he ranked, I want to say, eighth all time among sackers of the interior. So this was a highly, highly productive pass rusher. And then the other thing is, you know, as a run defender, he was the best run defender on that team. You know, he led the defensive line of the Bears in tackles seven times. So, I mean, you know, he checked almost every box, except the one box he did not check was the honors, because once again, he was playing with these other guys, you know, a little like Ken Riley the year before. You know, everyone was given the other guy that all the Pro Bowl votes, and he was getting ignored, but certainly he was a Hall of Famer as well. Yeah, I'd love to hear, Ira, what, you know, from a seniors committee standpoint, what you thought resonated about McMichael.
You know, Dan, McMichael's one of those guys, and every year there's somebody like that, where your initial reaction, you know, is kind of tepid. I don't know about this guy. And then, as we do on the committee, we start to drill down on the guy's career, and you take a long look at it, and you find out things that you had no idea about, like his sack total. I thought he was just a run stuffer, Haley Nagata type, but he was more than that. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting journey when you really zero in on Steve McMichael and what he did on that football field. And Dan, two words that I use a lot, Curtis Martin comes to mind in this regard: sustained excellence. Sustained excellence. It's like the eye test. If a guy does it at that level for a long time, that's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. So I'm glad McMichael joined, you know, Hampton, then Singletary, on what I think was that. And Dan, I'm not sure the 85 Bears was the best defense they had. I'm not even sure about that. Some people think it was 84. Now, you were there, but like you said, McMichael was right in the middle of the action. So I'm very happy for him. And Dan, I assume you're going to Kent this summer.
I will be there. It should be a fun summer. And I know, you know, it's a long way off, but Steve McMichael is planning on being there too. So.
Yes.
Whoa. Yes, he is. So they're making some plans to try to get, I don't know how it all is going to work out, but they're trying to make some plans, you know, special medvac or whatever, to get him there and have him part of the celebration.
Dan, I'm going to transport you, Daniel, from 1985 to 2024. And nobody knows the inner workings of the Bears franchise like our guest today, Dan Pompey. Dan, you know Jim Miller. I saw him in the combine in Indianapolis a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the Bears situation. Jim Miller was a quarterback, right, Dan, for Chicago. Knows the town very well. And we were talking about the number one pick and Justin Fields. And then he's very adamant. What he would do would be to keep Fields and draft Caleb Williams and not play Williams necessarily year one and then make a decision about Fields and Williams a year from now. Dan, what should they do and what will they do?
Well, Ira, obviously it's a fluid situation right now with free agency having started. But what's been interesting in the early going of free agency is that, you know, you've seen a lot of quarterbacks change teams. And apparently no one has tried to acquire Justin Fields as a starter, which, you know, is pretty – that says something. To me, you know, I think if the Bears cannot trade him for something that they feel is worthwhile, you know, then Jim might have a point. Then you keep him and you draft Caleb Williams and you see what happens. You know, usually in that circumstance, you'll see a starting quarterback will go down in training camp or a starting quarterback will go down in the first month or two of the season. And then the team that lost the player will get kind of desperate and they'll be willing to pay something in a trade that they're not willing to pay right now because there's a supply and demand issue. There's not any other quarterback of his caliber available. So, you know, I think if they want to maximize their return for Fields, that would be one way to do it. You know, I think to have a open competition, though, between Caleb Williams and Fields and say, may the best man win. I don't know if that I'd do that. You know, look, if you're going to take a guy first overall, I think you've got to invest in him. And I think he's got to know that he's the man and that he's not going to be threatened. And, you know, I think that's the way they need to handle Caleb Williams, assuming they draft him.
Dan, the Bears have been in Chicago since 1921. Dan, I'm old, but I wasn't around in 1921. And Dan, they've been at Soldier Field since 71 with the recent renovation, Dan, I guess about 20 years ago. Dan, this new Dome Stadium proposal, downtown Chicago, is it going to get anywhere? Dan, you know Chicago politics. It's complex. How's Soldier Field holding up? How quickly do they need to get a new facility up in Chicago?
Well, you know, they need a new facility without a doubt. If they're going to remain competitive with, you know, the Rams, for instance, that are playing in that palace so far.
Las Vegas. Yeah.
And later, you know, all the teams that have the new state of the art stadiums, you know, Soldier Field is the smallest stadium in the NFL capacity wise. And the Bears, don't own it. They have to share a lot of the revenue with the city of Chicago, Chicago Park District. So from that standpoint, it's really not an adequate home for them moving forward. You know, the problem is the same problem that they've had almost since 1921 is that they really don't have a good option. And Chicago's a little different from a lot of other towns. You know, they've got Kevin Warren as the president now who helped get the stadium built in Minnesota. I'm losing the name of it right now. But anyway, it's a different political climate in Chicago and the state of Illinois. And, you know, the Bears still owe something like, or I shouldn't say the Bears, the bill on Soldier Field, the old renovation is still close to $600 million owed. So now you're going to say, oh, you know, give us another whatever $1 billion or something. You know, they've got many, many, many hurdles to clear before they come to an agreement to have a stadium built, whether it's in Chicago, whether it's in Arlington Heights or, you know, Gary, Indiana. I don't know. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem to be that they have a clear path right now to any particular site, any particular city to build a stadium. So it's Kevin Warren's really got his work cut out for him.
Dan, I want to follow up on that conversation that Ira had with you about the number one draft pick. Just one last question. You're talking about unless they got fair value for Justin Fields, what do you consider fair value?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on what his role is going to be. I mean, to me, he's an NFL starter.
Okay.
You know, I think they should get, you know, the bare minimum, maybe a third round pick, a second round pick for him.
Right.
Because I think, you know, if you look at starters around the league, what is their value? I mean, obviously he's a different guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are still questions about him after a lot of starts. You know, now you could make kind of a case for him that he hasn't been in the best situation possible. He's, you know, changed offensive coordinators, hasn't had great players around him, you know, all these different things. But still, you know, you would have hoped to have seen more from him at this point. But I think there are probably teams out there that would say, look, you know, he's better than what we have, especially if they're in a situation where they get an injury, you know, as we've seen other teams do in the past, and then go out then and try to acquire a guy like him.
Yeah, and just to go back to what you were talking about, if in fact the Jim Miller scenario were to work out, let's say they were to keep him because they couldn't deal him, they're waiting for the best possible deal, and then they draft Caleb Williams. It reminds me of 2004. It wasn't the number one pick, but you remember when the Chargers got Eli Manning and then they traded him for Philip Rivers? Well, they got Philip Rivers because they were going to replace their existing quarterback, and that was Drew Brees. Turns out, though, 2004, Drew Brees became Drew Brees. And so Philip Rivers just sat on the bench, you know. And then Brees stayed there until the last game of the season. I think it was the following season, 2005, when he hurt his shoulder. And then Rivers comes in and we know the situation. He then goes in the free agent market. So at least that's not unprecedented. I'm saying it's not the number one pick. And I agree with you 100%. You picking the guy number one, probably going to have to start. There are aberrations to that. I remember Carson Palmer back with John Kitna, but I would think today you'd have to play. But I could see that possibly being the case. But I think you're right. If you hold on to him, you hold on to him to deal him maybe in the summertime or sometime when somebody's desperate for a quarterback.
You know, the Bears actually did the same thing in 1987 when they drafted Jim Harbaugh the first round. And they had Jim McMahon as their quarterback.
Wow.
A little less. I think you were in San Diego at the time.
I was in San Diego, and it later covered McMahon.
Yeah. So, you know, they had both of those guys on the same team for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of tension with the two of them. So, you know, that's what you risk with something like that. You kind of risk a divided locker room. You risk, you know, the vibes just not being real good around the team. But I think, you know, there are some benefits certainly to looking at it as a short-term proposition to try to increase the trade value.
We're with Hall of Fame voter Dan Pompey on the eye test for two. And Dan, one more question for me. Seniors committee question. As you know, I mentioned that Steve McMichael is one of two senior finalists who will be inducted in 2024. The third was Art Powell, and Art Powell wasn't elected. And two-part question. First of all, surprised. Are you surprised? And secondly, what do you think the repercussions or the fallout are from this for other AFL receivers like, let's say, Charlie Hennigan, Otis Taylor?
Lionel Taylor,
Gino Cappelletti. What are the repercussions? If Art Powell can't get in, what hope do those guys have?
Yeah, I was disappointed. You know, I thought that he was worthy and that, you know, a good case was made for him. Certainly, I think the AFL stigma hurt him, without a doubt. If he had done those things in the NFL, I don't think probably would have been in a long time ago. But, you know, Powell is a little like McMichael in that he came out of left field. He's another guy that never was a candidate before.
Right.
All of a sudden was kind of thrust into everyone's consciousness. And, you know, there were probably people on that committee who never heard of Art Powell before. I mean, you know, that's just the nature of what we're dealing with. When you're talking about a guy who played in the early 1960s. But I think, you know, it could have repercussions. I mean, you know, if you're sitting there trying to choose between, you know, a Lionel Taylor and a guy who played in the NFL as a committee member, you're saying, well, the guy in the NFL, you know, if their credentials are similar, he's got a better chance to get in. You know, you don't want to waste those spots. That's the thing. Right. Really, right. You know, we've got three spots now. I don't know how much longer we're going to have three spots for the seniors. And you want to maximize them and make sure that we get as many players in as we can. It was a shame. And, you know, I hope that next year we get three in whoever we pick.
Dan, just to follow up on that, this is my last one. Thanks so much, Dan, for your time. Just to follow up, now this might be a little bit inside baseball, but Dan, this podcast is very Hall of Fame centric. So I'm going to ask you, and Clark and I have talked about it extensively, you know, the contributor / coach candidate, he didn't make it, Dan, with the full votership. Art Powell didn't make it, Dan, and you can't substitute at that point. So instead of a 9-player class, we have 7. Dan, you're with me on the senior committee. You can imagine how you would have felt if McMichael came out of that committee and then didn't pass muster with 48 members. You would have been crushed just like Frank Cooney, who I saw, you know, and he's still talking about it. Dan, is there something to say about respect the committee? You have this committee of people that are dedicated to producing the best candidates, and then at the end, you know, not all of them make it. What's your feelings about that?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have always taken that approach, that I put a lot of stock in what the committee recommends, because, you know, as you guys both know, the committee does a lot of work, compares the candidates to one another, and, you know, really puts a lot of time and effort into it. But, you know, we can't expect the members of the board of selectors who are not on the committees just to be robots either and rubber stamp everything. You know, that's never been the case in our history. You know, there have been other players or contributors who have not made it despite, you know, the recommendations of the committees. So I guess we can't always count on that. But I really believe, and the approach that I take is I always have a lot of respect for that recommendation and almost always am going to follow it and say, look, they thought it was right, so I'm going to do it.
Ira and Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think baseball, the old timers committee, I think they can authorize that candidate. And think when they submit a candidate, I think he's in, isn't he? I mean, isn't that basically?
I think that's right.
Dan, you wouldn't be in favor of that. In other words, the senior committee says these are our three finalists, they're in. The coach contributor committee says this is our finalist, he's in. You don't take it to the full board. You wouldn't be in favor of that.
No, I still think that the full board needs to vote. I think that's best. You know, there's a reason there's 49. I think there's 49 of us now, right, on the full board.
50, I think it's 50.
Out of 50?
Yeah.
Okay, the number keeps creeping up.
It does, yeah.
I think there's a reason that you have that many people. And, you know, it's good to have the different perspectives and, you know, the different thought processes. So, you know, I just hope that everyone understands the work that goes into the recommendations, you know, the votes, the research, the discussions, and respects them as much as possible.
Dan, after the discussion on Buddy Parker to kick off the festivities, you probably thought we were going to be there for 2 days and two nights.
Oh, gosh, that was going on and on and on forever, right? It really was something, you know.
I still haven't gotten over that one, Dan.
Oh yeah, that was something. That was something, and the nature of the discussion, which we really can't talk about too much, was pretty stunning. But it is what it is. We move on to the next one, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've got one last one for you. I asked you about the draft next year, 2025. I'm not the draft. I'm sorry. The Hall of Fame draft, basically, who's up for the class of 2025. You've got a really top heavy list. And I was looking at the other day, Luke Kuechly's on it. Marcia Yonda's on it. Adam Vinatieri, as Irene, you mentioned. Terrell Suggs is on it. Marshawn Lynch is on it. But then there's a quarterback who's on it. Eli Manning is on it. So we talked about the Buddy Parker discussion. That lasted 70 minutes. How long do you think the Eli Manning discussion is going to last? And I'll put your feet to the fire. Do you think he is A, Hall of Famer, and B, a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of people who feel strongly on both sides about Eli. He is probably going to be one of the more divisive candidates that we've had in recent memory, because his resume is so interesting. I don't see him as a first ballot guy.
I don't either.
For that reason. Is it possible he gets in down the line? Absolutely. I'm kind of reserving judgment on him. I'm, you know, like Ira was saying earlier about a lot of time with these senior committee candidates, you know, we learn things, right, as we get in the meeting, as we do our research. He's a guy I'm looking forward to hearing the discussion about, learning things about, because I know there's a lot there that I don't know. You know, I know we're supposed to be experts and we're supposed to have all the answers, but I think, you know, you're kidding yourself if you think you know everything. I learn something every year when we talk about almost every candidate. So I'm looking forward to learning and hearing all about Eli's career and what should make him a Hall of Famer or what shouldn't make him a Hall of Famer.
Be a long discussion. You're right. Dan Pompey, thanks so much for the time. And best of luck with those Bears. Get them back on top, would you please?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
That was Hall of Fame voter Dan Pompey of The Athletic. And Ira, I think the Eli Manning discussion is going to be as long, if not longer, than the Buddy Parker discussion. It's going to be divisive. There are polarized people on this. I know, because you and I talk to them all the time. I know people think he's first ballot. I know people think he's no ballot. And you and I are somewhere in between there, but it's going to be a long discussion and a long debate.
It will be, Clark. And I'm assuming Gary Myers will make the presentation. And he's good at it, Clark. He's good.
Yeah, Glauber might. I think Glauber might make it. I'm not sure.
Maybe Glauber. I think Myers is already working on the discussion. Maybe he's going to help Glauber. Maybe they'll both do it. But you're right, Clark. You want to use the word polarizing? That might be too strong.
Good, yeah.
But if he didn't play for and playing for New York, I think it's going to become a factor, Clark. I just think it's back there in the background. He's not playing for the Bengals. He's playing for the Giants, and they beat the Patriots. And you know, I don't think he's getting in year one. But ultimately, Clark, I think he's getting in.
He probably will. One other thing, Ari, you know, when you were talking to Dan about Steve McMichael and you're talking about sustained excellence, and you said, you know, sustained excellence, that's what matters when the eye test. I thought you were talking about the sustained excellence of the eye test for two.
Well, I'm mostly talking about our crack producer, Ian Glendon.
There you go.
Who is wondering who the Patriots are going to start under center this season. Wait a minute. I'm hearing the roar of the crowd.
I think Ian's whipping him into a frenzy. That's Ian leading. He's whipping him into a frenzy.
Clark, I can picture you. Clark, I picture you with a hot dog in your hand. Where the heck are you?
No, it'd be two hot dogs, one for each hand. No, I'm going to take us back, since we were talking about the number one draft pick with Caleb Williams. And it's just a story I probably have told before. But anyway, I was in Baltimore in 1983 when they had the number one pick, because they had, you know, an 0-8-1 season, the strike season. So they had the number one pick. Well, they're going to take John Elway, right? They had so many offers, like I think the Bears are going to get for Caleb Williams to get out of there. And John Elway made it clear, I don't want to play there. I'll play baseball. I don't want to play there. I'll sit out the season, whatever. We who are covering the team knew that wasn't going to happen. But the question was, how firm would Ernie Accorsi, who was then the general manager, be on this issue? And he was very firm. He turned down every offer. and left that building that day with John Elway as the number one pick. And Elway, of course, called an immediate press conference saying, I'll never play for them. We know what happened, but the Bears are going to be under that pressure to do something here if they get an offer like, you know, maybe they can't refuse. I can't see that here because you have to have a conviction about one or both of these guys. And honestly, I do have a conviction about Justin Fields. I think he's a terrific running back. I don't think you can win with him as a quarterback. I don't. Caleb Williams, I'm intrigued by. I've watched him enough times at USC. I don't think he's John Elway, but I think he's clearly the number one pick if you're looking for a quarterback. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. may be the best player in this draft. But in any case, the Bears are going to have to kind of resist that temptation that Ernie Accorsi did then. And I give him all sorts of credit. Now we know what happened 1 week later. The owner, who is Bob Irsay, goes out to Denver and he makes the deal for Mark Herman, Chris Hinton, and the number one pick for John Elway. I mean, God almighty, Chris Hinton was a good player, really good player. But you don't win Super Bowls with offensive linemen. You win them with quarterbacks. And I look back at that and think there's a lesson there for Chicago. If they have a conviction about this guy, and I think they should, and I'm talking about Caleb Williams, you've got to move the other guy sooner, probably rather than later. And I think that Dan may be right in that you wait if you're gonna hang on to him through training camp because there's going to be an injury or someone may get desperate and sees that what they've got isn't exactly what they thought. But I think something may be done. I would think something would be done either on or before the draft. How about you?
I think that's the smart way to look at it, Clark. If you don't get – now, Dan said a number three, a third-round pick maybe. I think you got to get a two.
I do, too. I do, too. A two or maybe a low two, but yeah.
Maybe a low two. But if you don't get it during the draft, Clark, you wait. You wait.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's smart. I think
Hold fast. Get what you want. And we'll find something. We'll find out something about the Bears hierarchy now, I think, through this process. Ira, final thoughts for this week.
Final thoughts. Well, the Bucs have a GM called Jason Light, Clark. He's been there 10 years. This is his 11th year.
He's a friend of the show, Ira.
He's a friend of the show. They had that big five free agents that they needed to bring back into the fold. And Clark, guess what? They're 5 for 5. They did it all, including Mayfield and Mike Evans. Now, Winfield's on the franchise tag, but he's a very good player, and I think they're going to get him on a long-term extension. Clark, all of a sudden, the NFC South looks a little interesting with Kirk Cousins in Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Falcons, you know, depending on how Cousins returns from this injury, which is major, and particularly at his age, Clark, the Falcons could be a very interesting team this year.
They got a lot of talent, Ira. They got a lot of talent.
Yeah, and we'll see how Raheem Morris does. You know, in his second go around as an NFL head coach, I'm rooting for the guy, Clark. I covered him in Tampa. Quick story, Clark. Quick story. His second year, which was 2010, first day of training camp, Clark, first day. And he gets up to the podium and he says, guys, it's all about a race for 10. It's all about a race to 10. Nobody knew what he was talking about. Then he explained himself. He says, well, my analytical people say, based on history, if you win 10 games in this league, you're going to the playoffs. Now, ironically, they won 10 games with Josh Freeman and didn't make the playoffs. But Clark, when he said that, it's about a race to 10. And I'm sitting in the front row, Clark. And he sees me. And I'm kind of fidgety. And he goes, Ira, you look like you got a question. You want to say something. What do you want to say? I said, Raheem, about that race to 10. Does that include the preseason? And boy, he looked at me. and he wasn't mad, because Raheem doesn't get mad. And he goes, he didn't say Sage. He said, Ira, you're the only one who would come up with something like that. Does it count the preseason, Clark? Who else says that?
I've seen you fidgety like that before, Ira, and I asked the same question. You got a question there, and I thought you were going to say, yeah. Who's paying the bill, you or me? I've seen that before.
usually you see it when somebody's eating tater tots in front of me, and I can't get my hands on one.
Yeah, especially if it's Andy Reid. Hey, the last thing for you. I mentioned to you before the show, I see where your former Bucks head coach is back in football, and I'm talking obviously about John Gruden. Been hired as an advisor for the Milano, as in Italy, Seaman of the European Football League. So, Ira, I saw where the Milano Seaman introduced him as an American football legend. That's a quote. American football legend. Ira, how would you describe John Gruden?
I would I'd describe him as a lot of fun to cover because he was so emotional. Look, there were days, especially in the first couple of years, when I'd be in the press room, 6:30 at night, finishing up, sending my story. And then I would call him and I'd say, I'm coming over. I'm coming over to your office. What? I said, I'm coming over. 3 minutes later, I'm knocking on the door. He opens it. He lets me in. And we sit there and, talk about how great Brooks is and how lousy Rich McKay's draft choices are. And it was a lot of fun. Now, Clark, I'm not making this up. My wife and I are planning a big trip this fall. And the first stop on the trip is Milan, Italy.
No.
But suppose I show up at the team training center and Gruden spots me, half a continent away.
You should tell him that Raheem Morris told you that 10 was the magic number years ago. What's the magic number for Milano? Anyway, that's going to do it for this week. The magic number is 0. We're out of time. If you'd like to listen to either the iTest for Two podcast or Ira and me again, you can. You just go to our website. That's the iTestfor2.com or fullpresscoverage.com. That's Ian Glennon's website, and it's a good one. Otherwise, you can look for us next week right here at the iTest for Two. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you then.